says Amar Rabbi Yechi. It's a pretty big Gemara actually, but the last part moves quickly because it's a Gadita. Not a Gadita, it's actually it's like Rashi. We'll see. Amar of Ava, Amar of Chia Bar Ashi, Amar Rav. Maybe Adam Chavu Mitoch Beito, the Kosho Paro Vehus. So you'll have to bring a rope from your house and you tie it to one end to the cow and the other end to the feeding trough. I think a vus actually is what do you call it? The thing that fits over the mouth. Whatever that thing is called, the feeding thing. So the Gemara says, Eitive, I asked you a question from Bright or Misha, I'm not sure which one. So Rabbi Acha Aricha, there's a Rabbi by the name of Acha Aricha, Dehu Rabbi Acha Bar Papa, who also is Rabbi Acha Bar Papa. I guess he was a tall guy, that's why I call him Acha Aricha. So the Rabbi Ava. Chevel, I can tell you that the Rosh Hashiva of Gush, Rav Lichtenstein, they call him Stretch. The people who used to know him from YU call him Stretch. What?
He
used to call you that?
Yeah.
Stretch. So that, I think that's
a Rabbi Lichtenstein?
Yeah, Rav Lichtenstein, he used to call him, he was a good basketball player. He used to about 6'2", 6'3", so they used to call him Stretch.
Now you have a password
on
my computer.
Okay, don't tell me that. Hopefully you put a number for it afterwards. Chevel Shebe Ebus Koshro Bafara. So a rope that's connected to a trough, or this feeding device, you could tie to a para, that is one way, not both ways. Ushava para, koshu revos. And if it's on the para, you can attach it onto the feeding utensil. Ubovach lo yavi chevel mitoch beitov, yiksho para revos. But you can't bring a rope in your house and tie both directions. That's not okay. That would be considered a tying on Shabbat. So that's a direct contradiction of what Rav Abba said. So the Gemara answers no. It's not a problem. It's the same issue that we had before. In the case that it was Aser, it was a real rope. Over here, that is by Rav Ava, Rav Chia, the first statement that was a Chevel the Guardian, therefore it's okay to do a double tie on both ends. I'm Rav Yehuda Shmuel, Kol Kivai, Kivai, Mutar Tata of Shabbat. So the Kli Kivai, that's a weaver's loom. You are allowed to take the womb part, which I think I think it's the boards that you actually pass the shuttle through, but I'm not entirely sure. So you're allowed to pick them up and move them on Shabbat. Obviously assuming there's an error. With the same, it's not muktzah. So by the way, this seems like a non sequitur. It's not a non sequitur because we were just talking about a chevel degardi, the rope of a weaver. So while we were talking about the rope of a weaver, we figured we'd touch all the bases of all the other things a weaver has going on. That's really the connection here. Otherwise, it's sort of a tangent. By the way, Rabbi Yehuda, COVID. So Rabbi Yehuda asks a question: COVID ha'elyon, COVID ha'tachdon mahu. What about the heavy weight on the top and the heavy weight on the bottom? And I'm not sure exactly how Weber's loom worked, but I assume that it had a heavy piece at the top and the bottom to hold the sticks that you pass the shuttle through. I assume, like a top frame and a bottom frame. I assume, and I assume that they were heavy so that the thing didn't shake or didn't fall apart. So Gemara says, very interesting, by the way, Ein v'lav v'rafya bidei itman. He didn't know. Ein v'lav, he didn't know whether it was yes or no, and he was weak in his hands, but he really wasn't sure what the answer was. So Rav Nachman comes to the rescue. Rav Nachman, or Shmuel, klei kivai muter l'tatu on Shabbat. You're allowed to move the utensils of the loom of a weaver. Afilu kovet aliyom kovet atop. Even the weights on the top and the bottom of a lo et amudim, but not the. Apparently, this is how I'm picturing it. You got the weight on the top and bottom that you're allowed to move. I guess you have some kind of wood in the middle that you would pass the shuttle through, and then I think there were two beams on the right and the left that would hold it up. I think the right and left part of the frame. Just as a guess. You're looking for a picture there. Oh, that's nice. Put it in the middle. That's where we go.
This is the shuttle that goes through.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess this is the weight on top and the bottom.
This is right here.
What case is that? I'm not sure exactly what amudim
are. Weight refers to a heavy cylindrical beam, which is part of a loom.
Yeah, that's the top and the bottom.
The warp hangs from the upper beam and advances during the weaving process and is wound around the lower beam.
So what are the
saying weights? They're calling them beams.
So what are the other things? Though we just talked about the amudim, which apparently are usher. So what are those? If the weights are the things that the wood passes right to left. One thing I know is that the amudim will have to be stuck into the ground, whatever it is, because otherwise the Gemara coming up won't make much sense. Come, we'll see what it is. Otherwise, we'll run out of time. I think. Rava le Rav Nachman Maishna Mudim Delo. So Rav Nachman, I'm sure, is happy that he knows the answer to the weaving question, but he doesn't understand why he's answering the Amudim. So Ilem Adikavi Gumo, it's iffy to say that when you pull out the Amudim, it leaves holes in the ground, which would be Asur on Shabbat. So the Melikav, you can't say that because the holes were already there. You're not making new holes. Ditznan, we learned the same thing in the Mishnah. What do we learn? Atomei Lefet, it's no note. If you're burying radishes or some other kind of vegetable, tachara gefen, underneath the vineyard, im mitzat alav megulin, if some of it is up in the air, that is revealed, I'm sorry, im mitzat alav, if some of its leaves are megulin, are seen, eino choshesh lo mishum klayim, you don't have to worry about clay kerem, v'lo mishum shvid, you don't have to worry about shvid, v'lo mishum maser, you don't have to give maser on these things, I think because they're all temporary, I suppose. V'nitala b'Shabbat, not only that, you can pull them out on Shabbat. You're going to leave holes. That is, it's like one of those Bugs Bunny things where you pull out the carrot and there's like this big hole that goes down in the middle where the carrot was. So the Gemara says, so therefore it proves that pulling out the beam shouldn't be a problem, because even though you leave holes, it's not a problem because the holes are already there. It's like a socket. So the Gemara says, b'sadeh lo ati lashvi gumot, there's a different problem, because if I make holes, I'm going to fill them in. In a field, when I pull out the carrots or the radishes or the turnips, I am not going to fill in the holes. But hakav b'bayit, in the middle of the house, you're going to have holes in the middle of your house where the weem was. Excuse me, keep in mind that I'm sure the floors were made out of dirt. Yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't be such a thing. But if you have a little dirt, so you kick in the hole, you don't want somebody to trip over the hole in your house. So therefore, hakav b'bayit, dati lash v'guma, and therefore you can't use these poles, which... however they were in the womb, whatever they were certainly sticking in the ground, and pulling them up would create a hole, not create a hole, but it would uncover a hole, and therefore there was a gzera that you might fill in the hole, and therefore it was usher, even though the rest of the womb was perfectly okay. Sounds like the same question, right? What's the din? So the Gemara wants to actually a psak. So you remember we had three opinions. One was ein v'lav, he doesn't know. Rav Nachman was sure that it was a go. And now the Gemara, I guess, wants to go with Rav Yochanan on the Rav Yehuda Bar Levi. Apparently, I don't know, maybe he was an expert on these matters. So he says, Eimitalim, Matam, Lefisha Eimitalim. What that means is that they're not used for anything else. And since they're not used for anything else, they're mutzah on Shabbat. It's a classic case of mutzah. If I have something which, if I have a hammer and I want to use it to crack eggs, I can use it to crack eggs. If I have a buzzsaw, I can't do anything with it because, it's just a buzzsaw. It has no other use except for a buzzsaw. Well, in that case, it may be klima atosha aser because it has, because you make fire. But it's something which has only one specific use, and therefore it's not. It's called mat nitalim. Okay, Mishnah. Everybody okay up to this point? I'm sort of breezing along. It's not very difficult, Kamar. It's just more straightforward. It's just a little technical on some of the things that I'm not familiar with. So matnim mkalfin is the kalim. So you're allowed to fold over clothes, essentially. We're talking about sheets, bedspreads, stuff like that, tablecloths maybe. So you're allowed to fold these over even four or five times. We'll see why it would be a problem. And you're allowed to make the beds, essentially, from the evening of Shabbat on Shabbat. That is, on Friday night, you're allowed to make the beds. I think that's Malay Shabbat means, yeah? Aval lomi Shabbat, lomotzi Shabbat. For Shabbat. So you'll have to do it on Shabbat for Shabbat. Right. Aval lomi Shabbat, lomotzi Shabbat. You're not allowed to make the beds for sleeping Saturday night, because that would be your classic case of Achana Dirab. So Rabbi Yishmael and Mekaplan at that Kalim, so you're allowed to fold over the sheets, bedclothes, etc. Matzina et amitot, miyoma kippurim l'Shabbat. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, you're allowed to prepare from Yom Kippur to Shabbat, which I guess goes against the opinion of the Tana Kama. The Chalvei Shabbat could even be Yom Kippurin. If you have Shabbat and Yom Kippur that falls on the same day, then you are... Oh, by the way, in the first case, the Yom Kippurin the Shabbat, that assumes that Yom Kippur is on Friday, which can't happen now, but it could happen then, because back then the calendar was made whenever they saw the moon. Today, I don't believe that Yom Kippur could fall out on a Friday. The Chalvei Shabbat Kriven V'Yom Kippurin, and if you have the day fall on the same day, which actually can happen, so you make the Shabbat, you burn the Shabbat fats from the Korbanot on Yom Kippur. Avalosh Yom Kippurin Shabbat, but you don't do the Yom Kippur sacrifices of fats on Shabbat. Rabbi Akiva Meir Lo Shel Shabbat Kriven V'Yom HaKippurim V'Lo Yom Shel Yom HaKippurim Kriven Shabbat. You don't go either way. That is, you don't do Yom Kippurs on Shabbat, you don't do Shabbat on Yom Kippurs, because they're equal holiness, I believe. The Gemara makes a comment on this Mishnah. Amri Debei Rav Yanai Lo Shanu El Ba Adam Echad. So it's going to really limit it. We're referring now, by the way, to the folding over of the tablecloth, sheets, etc., etc. So Rav Yanai is going to really limit the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to say that the only time the Mishnah said it was okay to fold over even four or five times is only talking about a single person, about Shnei Bnei Adam Lo. And the reason why is because you're pulling out the creases. There are these creases, and you're pulling out the creases and making it straight. So essentially, you're doing something that cannot be done on Shabbat if you do it with two people. Not only that, even if you only have one person, you're only allowed to do it only with new ones. Because again, with the yishenim, it's easy to pull out the. You're able to pull out the creases, as opposed to the chadashim, which you're not. Anybody put on a brand new shirt, you ever buy it like a brand new shirt, you wear it and still got the creases. So it takes a wash or two until the creases go away. The chadashim nami lo aman el b'levanim. Not only that, even if you have the new ones, you're not allowed to do it unless they're white. Aval b'tzivuim lo. I'm not sure why. I assume because the tzivuim get nicer when you fold them over in some way. I don't know. Is there a comment there on why tzivuim would specifically be more of a problem? I guess probably because they fold along the color creases, perhaps. I don't know. Or maybe because tzvum are softer because they've been dyed, and therefore they uncrease faster.
Yeah, that's the wrong idea. Folding of colored garments substantially improves their appearance.
Yeah.
Whereas the folding of white garments does not.
Yeah.
So the only folding of white clothes is permitted.
And new. And new, and one person. It's a very limited case. Not only that, you can only fold it if you got nothing else to use on Shabbat. But if you have another one, then you toss it down the stairs into the laundry bin, and then you start a brand new one. Tana show beit Rabbi Gamliel lo ayam kalfin kli lavan. They wouldn't even do the white ones. And Rashi points out kavachomer the colored ones. Shalhem b'day shahayal lahem lahachlis. They would never do it because they had plenty of extras. Amar Rav Huna im yesh. What's that?
We wouldn't fold the talis. We wouldn't fold the talis in Shabbat because it's.
I mean, the fact is,
it's not new. And it's
do people not fold it and put it back into their?
Absolutely. Yeah. I
said don't kind of rolled up and put it in.
Well, the reason is,
and if it's a gula for Shalom Bayit, Matzah Shabbos to fold it.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I asked him once why. He says, because if you leave it wrapped in a bullet, your wife will kill you. But it's actually a gula for Shalom Bayit. Once it's Shabbos, you fold it.
Oh, okay.
Not on Shabbos. So you're folding it for the next week.
Well, the only question
one is... One reason I can think of is you're preparing on Shabbos for a weekday.
But it was a folding thing. Because some people, you'll see, they don't fold it on the same crease each week. They'll fold, but they'll fold it off the crease because they don't want to fold it on.
How could this whole thing kind of surprise me? The whole case surprised me. I didn't look in the Shulchan Aruch to see what the Halach L'maaseh is. But a lot of this seemed very strange. If I take a tablecloth and I fold it over, am I really pulling out the... It's not entirely, if I take it and toss it one or the other, and I'm going to use it, let's assume I'm going to use the tablecloth later.
Right.
Let's say it's Friday night, I pull off the tablecloth, I give it a good shake, get rid of the crumbs or whatever it is.
Okay.
So what do you need to fold it?
I guess that's the point.
And if you're going to fold it, maybe on the following weeks, you folded it for the...
Time. Well, that would be a chana, but this seems to be even more serious problem where you're improving, you're redoing the tak and the kli. Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I never thought about it. As far as the talit goes, I always wear my talit home anyway. People think I don't hold by the air because I wear my talit home. And then I take it off and I throw it on the couch, but not because I wasn't thinking this halakha, because I'm just a slob in general. So I guess my slobbery protected me from being over in a perhaps a drop on here. I didn't look at halakha l'maaseh to see what this refers. Is this referring to a shirt? Is it referring to socks? I mean, what if I have some socks? Am I allowed to roll them up, put them away? It's a little unclear to me. What?
Garment.
I don't think the word kalim is very strange here. I would suggest perhaps it was bugging me, the truth. And there's another part. I'll show you another part that's going to bother me even more in the next line. Amar Rav Huna, Yesh Ol HaHachlik Lachlik. If you have another one, switch around. So switch it around. V'im Lach. If you have a new one, so Yishal Shel Begadav. So what you do is you let down your clothes so they fold to the ground. So I think the Begadim that they're talking about now is like, I'm picturing like a cloak that went up to, let's say, the knee level. And then what they would do is if they, it's not really clear to me how to solve the problem. What they do is they let down the clothes to their ankles, I don't understand how exactly the mechanics work, to be perfectly honest. I remember in Israel, they used to make fun of Israelis who, you know, when they wanted to, you know, if they got their shirts dirty, so they would just roll it up, you know, to hide the dirt. And if that would get dirty, they'd keep rolling it up until it got to the top. And once the sleeves got to the top, then they would throw it into the wash. But this is the opposite. I don't understand how being mishalsha would have gotten out and letting them down solves a problem with neatness, to be perfectly honest. I don't exactly get it. Oh, you know what I do think I get? I guess when you're folding it down, you're uncovering a piece of dirt that was on the hem. That was the only thing I could think of, unless there's a commentary in there. That is, I'm wearing my hem, and I've got my cloak, and the bottom gets dirty. So what I do is I sort of let out the hem, and it goes down to the bottom, covering up the dirt that was there, and now it fell to the bottom, creating sort of a new garment that you can't see the dirt. So I'm making it look better, which is the whole problem of our Gemara. So if I have another one to put on, fine. But otherwise, I can't, I guess, hide the dirt by rolling down, unhemming my thing. Not a real hem, but just unfolding the fold. Because in a normal case, that would be making it look better. Yeah, I think that's
the
point.
It's a Shulchan Aruch rule that a prohibition to fold clothes applies only when one is careful to do so along previously made creases. That's why you let people fold the towels, but not...
Yeah, they just kind of toss it into the thing.
Since any other folds have no permanence, because you go a little bit off here or there, it doesn't really stay. This ruling is accepted by later authorities. Nevertheless, Mishnah Brewer comments that one who refrains from folding clothing, even not according to the original creases, is certainly acting on
the floor. Right. Okay. So I think you have two ways to go here with the Shulchan Aruch. I think it may also be a difference between, I know people who press their white shirts. That is, they always get them dry cleaned. And they look really sharp. You know, it just has a real nice look to it. And I don't, you know, I just, we wash it, and my wife probably gives a little iron, I give a little iron, but I can't say I'm not crease solid, you know, like this. It's, I'm not sure I could take this shirt and fold it and make it look any better. That's what I think is going on. But if I think you take a press shirt, like, that's right off the thing, and you wear it and still have to press, and then you fold it up along those really neatly pressed lines, I think that's what the Gemara is referring to. Because you're keeping it in that very fine, pristine state, as opposed to, you know, what I do, which is toss my shirt over the... You know, I think that's it. I think that a loose fold here and there is not what the Gemara is talking about. But let's continue on, or we won't put there. So Makdiler of Safra Baha Mitchase. I'm sorry. So Gemara, then a separate question, really. Now that we've established that you can let down your cloak, so to speak. So Makifla, or literally Makifla Rav Safra Ha Mitchase Kirumut Rucha. So the guy looks like he's a big egotist, because apparently only rich people wore their cloaks down to the ground. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a problem. Came to the whole Yomer, lo kavid, va'id, lo kavid, ha-mechazik, v'mud v'rucha. You see, he's not wearing his cloak like that every day. He's just wearing his cloak like that on Shabbat. So I can see why he's doing it. I can see he's not on some kind of clothes ego trip. The question is, would this affect somebody who's wearing really, really fancy clothes and driving a Porsche or something like that? That is, this idea of v'mud v'rucha, that seems to be, it's a very strange halacha, right? I mean, does that mean that I can't, it means, I think in modern English you call it taking on airs, which seems to be something of an issue. But the question is, you know, how do you posken that in the modern days? What does it mean if I wear, you know, if I get a $1,000 Armani suit, am I taking on airs? I don't know. Anyway, so is a poor person not allowed to dress like a rich person? I can't believe this is like feudalist that we're talking about here. So I'm not completely understanding how this halacha applies either. I understand the Gemara, but I don't understand the application. The Gemara says, really on a new subject, well, not entirely a new subject, but the question is how to behave on Shabbat. Good evening. We're a few lines from the top. Oh, okay. I think a pasuk in Shaya, which says, I shall honor him and prevent him from going on his way. I believe that's how the translation is, but I'm not sure. So the Gemara learns something out of all these words. You shouldn't dress on Shabbat like you should dress on Chol. When it says that means the things that give him kavod, i.e. his clothes. You know, clothes make the man type of thing. Then the Gemara says, what is what me'asot dirachecha? On a further analysis of the pasuk, says, shlo yehi luchash shabbat, luchash shachol. You shouldn't walk on Shabbat like you walk on Chol. We actually have this. I remember this is one of the 1/7 of the Gemara that we did learn. The Gemara says, what is Minsocha Tzacha? That's in the next part, that's in further on in the Pasuk in the same area, even though it's not quoted by the Gemara. Which means you go about, you're not allowed to go about your business, but you can go about God's business. I think Rashi points out there, making shiduchim, and that is, you could really not travel in a, you know, like in a car travel, but you could really take a good, you know, you could really, if your business is doing a shidduch, then you could really go out of your way to do that business. But you can't do your own businesses, apparently, even if it's not specifically usher on Shabbat. V'diber davar, and spoke a word, shlo yeh divorcha shel Shabbat. We're on the next page now. Amadet, shel Shabbat ki divorcha shel chol. That you shouldn't talk on Shabbat like talk on chol. Dibor aser, but hirhor is mutter. So you're not allowed to talk business, for instance, but you could think business as long as you don't talk about it. The Gemara says, bishul makulu chayai, I understand all of this. It all makes sense. What does that mean? You can't walk like you walk on. You can't walk on Shabbat like you walk on, during the week. What does that mean? So the Gemara says like this: Ki ha d'amar Rav Huna amar Rav Amri le amar Rav Abba amar Rav Huna. Haya mahalik b'Shabbat. Guy walks on Shabbat. Upaga b'amit ma'im. He walks into. He confronts a big puddle, a significant puddle. Im yachol lahaniach et raglo. If he could put down his second leg over the puddle, kodim shteakar shnia mutar, right? You follow what I'm saying? So if these are his feet, so you got one foot down on the second side before you do the foot up. I remember with my father, I love Shlomo, we used to play like don't step in the crack. So, you know, you're like, you have to get your foot over the crack without picking up the other foot or whatever it was. So I have a halach shabbat pagabama. Sorry, where were we? V'im lav aser. What this is really telling you, by the way, the simple parish of the Gemara is that if you can't make it in one step over the amamayim, you're not supposed to jump it. You can't leap it. So essentially, the Gemara then says the obvious question, what's he going to do? Is he going to stay there? Is he going to stay there all Shabbat? So the Gemara says, like him, let him go around. So the Gemara says, no, you can't do that. Kimafish b'ilucha, you're going to make him go, we're assuming the puddle actually is quite long, if it's like a mini river, and now you're going to make him take a long walk, which gets around, which is the other problem. You can't do that on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, lay off us, let him cross, get a little bit wet. What's the big deal? So the Gemara says, no, Zimnin, you can't do that. Zimnin mitvasin ma'ani maya. His clothes will pick up a little water. Vati de schita, then he'll come and squeeze them out. So you can't make him go into water. So elo baha kemiglo efshar shapitani. So the answer is that if you can't lift up, the goal is not to lift up one foot while the other, without, leaving the other foot in place, which is the goal is not to leap. But if you can't leap, shapir dami. So you leap. Which sort of throws away the original assumption, by the way, because now theoretically you are allowed to take a leap if necessary on Shabbat. So the Gemara then answers another possibility. Ela kedibai minei Rav mirevi Yishmael beri Yerosi malapso psia gas b'Shabbat. So what about taking big steps on Shabbat? So now we have this idea of psia gas, these big, fast, I'm in a move kind of walks. So Amalei kind of like power walk. Some of the people call me who trust. So you know what's funny is the Gemara is going to slug this up, even though it's not going to really find a different solution. The Gemara says, "I'm going to lay the chol mihutra." Who says you're allowed to take these big steps on chol? Shani Omer, I say, see a gasan tell a chaver chamesh meod mimora nafshal adam. They're hurtful, physically hurtful to a person. They take away 1/500th of the light of one's eyes. Umahader lay the kedusha de beis shimshay. And when do you get the light back? When you have the kiddush on Shabbat. We actually did this, by the way. We looked at Rashi and some other Kabbalistic interpretations. This is a Gemara. I can't remember which Gemara, but early on Shabbat. So that's it, by the way. The Gemara is finished. Which doesn't really solve the problem, because what we were trying to figure out, how you can't walk on Shabbat in ways that you can't walk on, ways that you're allowed to walk on Chol. But according to this Gemara, you're also not allowed to walk that way on Chol. But the Gemara apparently leaves off that. So I think I saw in a commentary in the Art Scroll that the idea was that there's two problems. One is a physical damage, and the other one is a spiritual problem with Shabbat. So physically, you're not supposed to do it during Chol. But on Shabbat, you're not allowed to do it for two reasons. One is physically, one spiritually. It's a tough answer, because the Gemara doesn't really solve the problem. The Gemara then never really comes up with something that you're allowed to do on Shabbat. You're not allowed to do a chol. And not only that, it brings proof from another thing that you're not allowed to do on Shabbat, or something that you're not allowed to do in both in general and special cases. Let's see what that is. So, Bayi Minei Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi, Ma'o Lechol Ad Mat Shabbat. Can I eat dirt on Shabbat? It's an interesting question, right? So, Amalei B'chi B'chol Mihutra. What are you asking that kind of question for? Who's allowed to eat dirt during the week? So Shani Omer, Af B'chol Asim, Fnei Shu Malkev. It hurts you. again, we have a situation where Shabbat's not special. Shabbat has the same Isser as a regular week. Although, you know, according to the answer I gave, the Isser is the same, but the reason for the Isser is different. But the end is no different, so it's a difficult Gemara. So I'm already Ami, Kol Ochal Me Afar Shabbat Kilo Ochal Me Basar Al Atav. It's pretty disgusting. Anybody who eats the dirt. What?
Eating dirt.
That who, where is that? And it comments on what? Commenting on what Gemara?
On you said about eating dirt.
Yeah, but it says you're not allowed to. Shani Omer, Apachol, Asim, Nishu, Malka.
Right, but eating of certain types of earth was practiced.
Oh, and therefore you can't do it on Shabbat. So you still can't do it on Shabbat.
Medicine.
Yeah, yeah. But why?
And suffers a non-threatening pain and illness is prohibited on Shabbat.
Yeah, you know what the Mir said? The Mir is struggling with this Gemara. You know why? Because the Gemara leaves you with the situation that it's us on Shabbat and us during the Chol, in which case we haven't solved our problem with why is Shabbat special.
Yeah, because, you know, it says that, you know, with, they used to have to crush things, water and pestle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This didn't have to be crushed. It's almost like the question, what about taking liquid medicine nowadays? You're not crushing.
Yeah, I understand.
Dirt didn't have to be.
I understand all this. Crushed. None of this is in the Gemara, though. The Gemara doesn't say anything about it being refuah. The Gemara seems to come chav chalak, don't eat dirt ever. that seems to be the good logic of it. The Meiri is coming up with a way that you can eat dirt during the week, but you wouldn't eat it during Shabbat. And that's fine. The Meiri can certainly interpret that because the Gemara is difficult without it. There's no doubt the Gemara is difficult without it. But it's pure insertion. It's pure insertion. So I think again, I don't mean that it's a wrong insertion. I just want to demonstrate that it's not actually the Gemara. So Amar Rav Ami, this is a little weird. Kol ochel mi afer shabato. Actually, not weird. Quite realistic. Ki'ilu ochel mi basar avatav. It's like you ate the flesh of your fathers. You can imagine why. By the way, what they're saying is that people died and they left them. That is, the Babylonians didn't really do cemeteries so carefully. You know what I'm saying? We mark our cemeteries. Back then, they couldn't care less. They built, you know. They didn't put gravestones. They just buried people in the ground and then walked away. So therefore, that's the insult against the Babylonians here, that essentially, you know, don't eat the dirt of Babylonians, which also sort of supports the Miri idea, because why would they tell you that you shouldn't eat the dirt of the Babylonians and never supposed to eat dirt at all? There must be some application that you can use dirt for, and that's why the Miri does make sense. But in any event, you're not allowed to eat Babylonian dirt because there's a good chance you're eating grave. And it's worse. It's like if you eat Babylonian, it's like you're eating bugs and creepy crawlies. This is the pasuk where all people were wiped out by the flood. And where did that happen? We'll see. It happened in Bavel. Amareish Lakish Lama Nikra Shema Shinar. Why was Bavel called Shinar? Shekol Mitei Mabul Nin Arusham. All the dead of the Mabul were washed away there. I have to say, by the way, this gets into a very audacious bit of Torah, which is, was the Mabul a worldwide sensation, or was it just limited to the Mesopotamian plains? So as audacious as that sounds, I'm not going to get in trouble by mentioning it, but the Gemara does seem to imply that Mesopotamia was the at least the center of the Mabul. For a vast flood. That's right, but not outside of it. The question is, when the psukim seem to indicate that the whole world was covered. So the question is, you can understand it metaphorically or not. So I know Rav Lukens is pretty flexible on this issue. I happen to know he's flexible on this issue. The question is, can you get away with it? I don't want to go into it right now because I'll get into more trouble than I'm always in anyway. I'm Rav Yochanan, Lama Nikra Shema Mitzulah. So how come these people are called in Bavel called Mitzulah? So called Mitei Bavel Mitzdalusham, because they were all drowned there. So wait a second. Let's go back to that third one, which is, it's like you're eating bugs and creepy crawlies. How could it be bugs? They all, you know, they all washed away. So Amri came into Malki Gazri Bei Rabbanan. So the answer is, it hurts you, so there's a gzera that you can't eat it. So the truth is, there are no bugs there per se. But there's a gzera, you can't eat, for whatever reason, you can't eat it because it hurts you. Daha, and then there's a weird story. Dahu gavr da'achel gargishta va'achel tachlei v'kadchulei tachlei v'libe umeit. So he ate clay, dirt, you know, global dirt, and then he ate tachlei, it was some kind of tree or branch or vegetable, the kadchule tachle, and it start to sprout the libe and punctured his heart and he died. That's like one of those nightmare stories. My wife tells me that she once when she was a kid that if you eat orange juice with the seeds, so the seeds will grow into seeds will grow into trees, your stomach, and you'll orange juice. So she didn't drink orange juice for quite a while with seeds. So I don't know how factual this is. I couldn't tell you whether clay that has something in it could wind up growing something. I know there's a famous
Gemara. Most of the seeds that grow need the air and sunshine, which is not going to give.
I don't know. Maybe there's something here which grows without, and even though it's surrounded by the acid of the stomach. I can only say that in some cases the question is what are they, scientifically they weren't always foolproof. I remember one case. There's a Gemara, I think, about Hadrian, who had a fly flying through his ear, and they opened up his head. The fly was the size of this. And one, I think most people accept now that what they said, they probably did open his head. They weren't making that up. And they probably pulled up something large and black, and what it probably was was a tumor that grows. Anybody seen that? It looks, quite disgusting. So that's probably what it was, and they just assumed it was a fly that grew and grew. So the facts were correct. They just didn't understand the science behind it. But in this case, I think we'll just move along. I think most people understand that eating dirt is bad. So Rechatz of Sachta, so now we're getting into Pasuk work, and that's where the Gemara is going to go on. So it's pretty quick Gemara. How are we doing? I've been teaching for about 40 minutes or so. I think I didn't take the first part, but I think it was about 10 minutes. I have a half an hour on my clock now. The Gemara says it's an interesting Gemara. Rechatz of Sachta v'Samta Shemotecha. So this is what this is Naomi's advice to Ruth to go and convince Boaz that he was the right man for the job. So Amar Rav Elazar Elu Begadim Shel Shabbat. So that means that she wanted him to get dressed. He wanted her to get dressed. Sorry, she wanted her to get dressed in Big Day Shabbat. This is analysis of the pesukim. It's like parshanut. This is exegesis. So Tein Lechem, Tein Lechacham Vayechkam. So there's something in Mishlei which says, "Give to a wise man and he'll get wiser." So Od Amar Rav Elazar. So nothing Rav Elazar said about Ruth. Zu Ruth Amoviyahu Shmuel Aramati. So I'll tell you who people who are smart and you give them good advice and again. They take it. They do even better. So Ruth the Ilunami Kamar Lo Rachatz V'Sachta V'Samta Simotayeh Alecha V'Radita Goren. So she told him to get dressed up all fancy, fancy, schmancy, and then go down to the Goren. The Ilu Bedida, but Ruth was smart. So it says Ktiv V'Teirat Goren. First she went down to the Goren, the Hadar, and then afterwards the Tatzchol Shetzavam Chamotan. Then she dressed up. What? Yeah. Well, I think the Chazal generally say something a little bit sharper that they would think that she was on the make. Was on the make, but this way she dressed like a standard person. So she would. So you're right. Not only not notice, but not assume the worst. So that was really they assumed that there wasn't if she was going down with a bottle of champagne and some candles, so they'd suspect the worst. So that was her. That was her idea. Shmuel, what about Shmuel? How come he took advice and did one up on it? You Eli Kamala, when he started hearing the voice of God, Shmuel, Eli said to him, Shachav Ayayim Yikra Elecha. The voice here calls you, because at first Shmuel got called a few times, didn't know who it was. Vamarta diber Hashem, speak God, ki shomei avdecha, v'ilu b'didei, but when he actually did it, k'tiv bei v'yavo Hashem, and God came, and he stood up, so to speak, let's not get into that. V'yikra k'fam v'fam Shmuel Shmuel, he called Shmuel Shmuel, v'yomer Shmuel daber, he doesn't say diber Hashem, ki shomei avdecha, v'lo amar diber Hashem. There's no exposition on this, by the way, the Gemara. The Gemara just assumes that Daber is better than Daber Hashem. So there are various commentaries, because maybe it was an angel, and he wanted to take Hashem's name in vain. It could be just that he was more modest, and he just didn't want to assume that that it was necessarily God. Let God tell you who it is. So I think there are various ways to interpret this, but it's all very nice, and it speaks about the humbleness of Eli in general. Not of Eli, of Shmuel. So now we're back to Ruth. What about what it says where she came and she went? A very strange lashon. It says Vatelach Vatavo. She went and she came. She went and she came. So Vatilach Vatavo. So Rav Elazar Shehalcha Uvata Halcha Uvata. It means repetitively. She went back and forth. Acha Matzav Bnei Adam Hamahuganim Leleich Imahem. So she didn't go just. She went to the first field. She found a whole bunch of bums working there. So she kept searching and searching, and she found a bunch of nice, firm people that she could do business with. So Vayomer Boaz Lenaro Hanitzav Al Kotzrim. So then Boaz says to his officer or his servant who is in charge of the reapers, Lamia Narazo. Who's this Nara belong to? So the Gemara says Chidak Shabos L'Shomanara. Boaz says, who's that hot chick? And that's what Boaz would do. So Amar Rav Elazar davar chachma rabba. No, he's not asking because she looked good. He's asking because she has a davar chachma, because she behaved in a certain way. What? What? Well, what? She's impressed by her film kite. You don't believe that?
That hot chick?
No, that's what the Gemara is saying. It's not. Oh, no, okay. I'm saying v'chi darko shabos l'sholben arai. You think Boaz would say, "Who's that hot chick?"
Okay.
No. I meant that. I meant that in terms of the question, not the answer.
Okay.
Good. I'm glad you stopped me, because otherwise you think the worst of me. So I'm gonna really, no. I'm saying that's adopted now. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to modernize it a little bit. So I'm gonna have davar chachma rabai. She saw something that was brilliant. That was she was doing a wise thing or a Torah dick thing, perhaps is the best way to say it. So shnei shibam lakta, she took when there were two things that fell, so she took shlosha shibam eino lakta. So that's the din when it comes to leket. If two things fall, one or two fall, that's yours. But if three fall, that still belongs to the property owner. So b'matnita, now I don't know what that means, to be honest, in the Mishnah, but I'm not sure what they're referring to. So is there a citation there in your Gemara? I don't have a Gemara in front of me. I just have my thing. I'm not sure what b'matnita means. Is that a place? Where's the Bright then? Bright does usually talk about things like this? It's not usually the type of thing that Bright talks about. Does it quote where the Bright is? Is there a citation? I don't know. I thought it was a very strange lashon. Usually it's not Matanitas that talk about these things. I was thinking that maybe they had these things in Tanaic times where they used to sit and talk about Tsukim. And maybe there was some kind of scroll or parchment that they still had that had like a little bit of Rashi, like Rashi from the time of the Mishnah. I don't know. I'm just guessing. So Matanit Tana Dava Tznuot Rabba. It's not that she was smart, it's that she was Tznuot. So Omdo Meumad Noflot Miyushav. She would stand up straight when she was next to a bushel that next to a shock that was not hers to take, and they'll fell it Miyushav. But when she went down to take it, she didn't bend down. I remember my Rebbe told me, I still remember this when I was a little kid, the Rebbe doing demonstrations, so I'll have to pass it on as part of the Mazar. So instead of, you must have learned this, kid, instead of going like this, to pick it up, so she bent at the knees to pick it up so that she was modest. So that's what I was taught when I was a little kid, and this is the Gemara that it comes from. The Chotid Bakim in Narotai, so let's do a little more. Now this is very difficult, this Gemara. Thus shall you attach yourselves to my girl servants. Is it the way of Boaz to attach himself, quote unquote, to women? And what's not clear here, the assumption is the word dabek is slightly a dirty word. It means to mess around. But that's not what he suggested to her. He suggested that she hang out with the women. There was no sexual content there. So Amar Elazar, let's just read the answer, see if we can glean what the question is. Because you follow the question is not so clear, because if I say to you, go attach yourself, if I say to a girl, go attach yourself with the girls, that does not mean I'm attaching myself to you. And not only that, it's like, to be perfectly honest, it's like slang words. I'll use one, everybody always laughs in Israel about the word beitza. But if you're going to buy eggs, so you go into a store and you buy beitzim, that's what you do. You don't buy beim. I know in yeshivas they buy beim. But in Israel, you buy beitzim, and nobody laughs because that's the correct situation. If you're talking about something that's off color, so okay, then it's off color. Or the same thing with all kinds of different words in the words based on the meaning. If Boaz said to Bakima Narotai, you girls should attach yourself to girls, it's not a sexual content. So why does the Gemara think that it is? So let's take a look at the answer. So Rav Elazar came to Chaza when he saw Batishe Karpala Chamotavu Davka Ba, that Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, so to speak, and Ruth attached herself to him. So Amri Shari La'adbuke, what's that? To her. So Amri Shari La'adbuke Li'idbuki Ba. So I can attach myself to her. There's something strange going on here. It's not a semantic game. Like Boaz didn't know that the word is a kosher word until he. It's a little strange. I think what he's trying to say, here's my guess on how the Gemara reads. The Chidarko Shabbat is Abekim Hashim, the very fact that he would give advice to girls, I know in modern times that seems very strange, but the very advice that a field owner would go over to a girl and have a conversation with her and suggest who she attached herself to is flirtatious. I don't mean that in a negative sense. I mean, it means it's a step beyond what a normal guy would do with a standard girl back in those days. So what the Gemara is saying is, isn't he opening it up conversation a little bit too much with girls? And therefore, one could assume, you know, that he was interested in more. And the answer was, yeah, maybe he was, but so what? Because he wanted to marry her, because he saw the kind of girl he was from the way that she acted with her mother-in-law. The question, by the way, that this brings is, did Boaz know at the time who she was and what she had done and whether she had converted or not? But that's a totally separate issue that comes, that's Megillah, that's understanding Megillah Rut in the first place. So let's just avoid those issues right
now. All the people, as they want to decide, you know, go talk to her to send her to the girl. I mean, nobody else, boy.
Yeah, there's also
landlords, you know, big guys.
I don't want to go into it, but the Gemara is sensitive here to things that we should be sensitive about when I was not. There is something sexual going on there, because she comes back to Nami, and she says, the guy told me to hang out with the boys in Na'arim. There's a gender switch going on in Perek Gimel, where he says go hang out with the girls. She comes back with reports that she was told to hang out with the boys, and the mother says no, you must hang out with the girls. It's a very subtle shift. It's between a nun and a mem, na'arot and na'arim. Very subtle shift. There's something going on where apparently Boaz was maybe trying to get her set up, you know, let her hang out with the guys. And he warns the guys not to touch her, though. There is something sexual actually going on. It looks like Boaz is trying to shidduch her up. And I think Chazal are alert to this, even though they're not fully describing it. But again, that's more of a shear in Rut, and that, you know, we get into that now, we'll spend hours on it. Gemara goes on for more interpretation. Vayomer la Boaz le'eta ochel goshi halom. So when it's time to eat, she said, get over here, a very ancient word over for the word here, halom. So there is a remez ramazla. He told her a remez. So the King David is going to come out of you. Dechtiv be halom. It says halom by her. It says by David halom. Shneimar v'yavo melech David vayeshav l'fnei Hashem or vayashav l'fnei Hashem vayomer mi anochi adonai Hashem elokai umi Hashem elokim umi veiti kiyem v'yani ad halom, that you brought me up to this point. So there's a mutual word of a halom, and therefore there's an attachment between the two stories. Yeah. Okay, I whether that's a remez that the author is telling or whether the remez that Boaz is telling, I don't know, so we'll just continue on. But tavata pitcha b'chomet, so you should dip your bread into vinegar. So amar rabbeinu mikan shechomet yafel sharav. That's how we know that chomet is good for a... yeah, this is where the famous... This is I think Rashi brings it down. Yeah, this is where it's from.
It was a whole lot of times.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a whole lot of it.
Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani unfortunately has a worse interpretation. This is very negative, by the way, what's coming up. Remez Ramez La Atid Ben Latseit Mimcha Shemasav Kashin Kechometz. Or maybe Kechometz, I think. There's no Vav there, but I think it's Kechometz. That if somebody's going to come out of you who's as bad as Chometz, Umanu, and who is this Nasha? It's a very negative statement, to be honest. I'm not sure why Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani is going there, but so he goes. Batashav mitzada kotzerim, you shall sit on the side of the harvesters. This is what I was referring to before a little. Some of the letters, mitzada kotzerim, little b'tocha kotzerim, on the side of the kotzerim, not in the middle of the kotzerim. Remez ramez la shatidam balchum beit mahut David shetecha lake. That's the division of the kingship. Again, this is very, very difficult to read these psukim, so I'll just leave it alone. Vayatz bot la kali b'tochal. So the English translation has, he handed her over. I believe the correct translation of the word by Yitzbat is that he fried her up, or roasted her up, kali, roasted nuts, vatochal, and she ate them. I'm not positive. Amar Rav Elazar, vatochal, what does it mean? It says vatochal, vatisba, vatotar. So what does it say? Vatochal will be made David, vatisba will be satisfied in the days of Shlomo, vatotar, and you'll have leftover in times of Chizkiah. Those who say Vatochal b'mei David b'mei Shlomo, Vatisba b'mei Chizkiah, you'll be satisfied in the days of Chizkiah. Vatotar b'mei Rebbe, and Rebbe will be the left, where the real Totar means the real financial benefits come across. The Amar Mar Aharure the Rebbe who Atir Mishavur Malcha, the servant or the groom stable boy of Rebbe was richer than the prince of named Shavur. It was his name of Persian. The Matnita Tana, we learned again in this Matnita, I have no idea what it is, but Tochal Bolam Azeh, but Tispa, you should be satisfied, Limot HaMashiach, but Totar Latid Lavo. The only interesting point I want to make there is that there is a difference between Limot HaMashiach and Atid Lavo. Do you notice that? That's a very important philosophical concept that people tend not to notice. People just assume that Yimei Mashiach is Olam Haba. It's not I don't think anywhere in the Gemara does it say that. The Yimei HaMashiach is much earlier than the days of Atid Lavo. What that means is a separate issue, but it's an important philosophical concept that I think people need to, I think it's important for people to understand. V'tachak kvoto yikod, yakod, you have the vowels there? I don't have the vowels there. Yikod, yakod, is it yikod, yakod?
Yekad,
that's right. Yekad, yikod, kikod, esh. So in his in place of his honor will be burnt up like brands of fire. What they're referring to here, by the way, is not Shabbat, like referring to before in Yeshayahu, I believe it was Yeshayahu before, but here we're talking about Ashur, and the king of Ashur is going to come, and then God's going to take vengeance on him because he was too nasty. So Rabbi Yochanan, b'takha kvoto v'lo kvoto mamash, what it means is specifically underneath his kavod and not kavod itself. What does kavod mean? Rabbi Yochanan, l'taymein, Rabbi Yochanan goes according to his reason, Rabbi Yochanan kari l'manye machvudot mechab dutai. What does it mean, tachat kavod? It means underneath his clothes. I'm not going to read more into it than that. Rav Elazar then comes and says the following. Omer v'tachat kvodo, tachat kvodo mamash. It means literally underneath his clothes. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani omer tachat kvodo k'sreifa p'nei adam. What it's referring to is the way that the children of k'sreifa p'nei arom, like Nadav and Avihu, got burnt up. Mal halan sreifat neshama v'guf, sreifat neshama, the soul got burned, v'guf kayam, but the body was left over. Afkan sreifot neshama, the neshama was burnt, the guf kayam, the body was remaining. Now, I do not know if Shmuel Rav Chmini is expounding on Rav Elazar, and if Rav Elazar is expounding on Rav Yochanan. I don't know. Because then I don't see the difference between those three opinions. Except each one is a little more clear. Or whether they're actually, or whether the first opinion that Tachak Vodo is talking about something else, I couldn't tell you, but I'm going to take the easy way out, assuming that Rav Shmuel Bar Chmini agrees with the other two, saying that they all got killed in the way Nadav and Avihu, and I've always pictured that like the end scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where the lightning comes out and wipes them out, but their clothes are still there, except with holes. So that's the way I've always envisioned it. But according to this, there's actually no damage to their body whatsoever, so I could be wrong. So Amar Rav Acha Bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, we'll just continue on, I guess, the next page. Minayim l'shnuya begadim in Torah. How do we know that you're supposed to change your clothes? Shneamar pasha that begadav levash begadim achrim. Talk about a kohen who takes off one clothes and then puts on another clothes. The tana be rishmal limdchat Torah derech eretz begadim shebishel bahem. The clothes that you cook in k'deiro l'rabo that you cook for your master in al yimzog bahem clothes l'rabo. Don't mix up a drink for your master. For your rabbi, obviously you were talking about korbanot here, but whether that actually applies to the standard case. I did prepare the Gemara for another few lines down while we're still talking about clothes. It's your choice. We can go on if you like. Should we continue on a little bit? Give the next guy a break. It's a pretty simple, straightforward Gemara. We've actually seen it once before, which is why it's so easy. You've seen this on Shabbat. I'm Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Rav Yochanan. I'm Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Rav Yochanan. What time do we start? About what? 5 minutes
after?
Oh, after it. Oh, wow. Doing really well. So I'm Rav Chiya Bar Abba, I'm Rav Yochanan, Gnai Hu Tam Chafshin Yetzib Nali Mitulayim. It's an insult. It's an insult that a Tam Chafshin should go out with holy shoes. Holy, obviously, meaning H-O-L-E-Y. L'shuk, to the public place. V'ha, Rebbe Bar Chiya L'chanan Nafik. He went out like that. I'm Rav Chiya, Rav Acha Bereda, Rav Nachman. But Tzlai Al-Gavi Tzlai. No, he was wearing... What I'm talking about, patches are okay, but patches on patches are not okay. Remember, we had this Gemara in Shabbat before. So, Amar, but there's a little curveball coming up, it's kind of curious, so I thought I'd read it to you. Amar Chiya Bar Ava, Amar Rav Yochanan, Kol Tanu Chacham, Shenimsa Rava Val Begado, if you have a stain on your shirt. I remember being taught this when I was in the eighth grade by the principal of Hank, and it scared me, daylight out of me, so I'll read it to you. If you're a Tanu Chacham, who goes out with a stain on his shirt, Chayiv Mita. Shneamar kol misana'ai ahavo mavet. All those who hate me, they love death. Altakri misana'ai, which is in the kal, ela masni'ai, which is in the hifil, means anyone who causes people to hate me. And that's very clear. You're not being nailed because you have a stain. You're being nailed because saying, oh, look at those Tamil Chacham, and they dress like garbage, so must be their Torah is ridiculous also, or something like that. Ravina Amar Reved Itmar. It's not a stain, it's a semen stain. The low plige, and it's no argument. Ha beglima, the ha bilvusha. One is in your undergarment, and one is in your outer garment. Vam Rav Chiya bar Abba, Vam Rav Yochanan, Mai Dechtiv Kaasher Halach Avdi Yishayahu, Arom V'Yachef. It says that he was walking around naked and tired, Arom V'Gadim Bluim. I mean, he was naked, Chashon. It means that he was wearing patchy clothes, V'Yachef V'Nalim V'Tulayim, and he was wearing and kind of tired or just decrepit. That was with shoes that were holy, that had holes in them. As far as the previous bit goes, the assumption is, the truth is I'm going to leave it the way it is. You know, we don't really have enough time to analyze it, but it's interesting. It's interesting that if the stain is visible on the inner shirt, that is a regular stain on the inner shirt is not a problem, on an outer shirt, but the other stain on the inner shirt, or is it the other way? Is the seam stain on the outer shirt that's a problem, or the inner shirt that's a problem? It doesn't say. All it says is ha, habiklima, habilavusha, but never says which one's the inner shirt, one, which one's the outer shirt.
This one, Rabbi Yochanan, deals with a cloak. That's an upper garment.
Rabbi Yochanan, who said what? Rabbi Yochanan said, who said a regular stain, that was on the cloak. But if you have a regular, what that means is a regular stain on a glima, then you're not chayiv mita because, you know, people don't see it that much. That's the assumption here. A glima is the inner shirt. So if I have a little stain on my shirt, but I'm wearing a suit jacket over it, okay, or have a tie. Right? It's the whole purpose of ties anyway, to cover up the stains that I get when I eat on Shabbat. So then it's not such a problem because, you know, you really have to get in close to see it, or maybe because people understand it's an inner shirt, the guy had a little stain, it's not a big deal. But if it's an outer cloak where you expect people to have a certain cover, and you don't have cover, so then you get nailed for it. But the semen stain, if people see it, which is really shocking anyway, I mean, you know, I found the Gemara a little bit shocking, you know. That would be, you know, the amount of hatred that one would, there's a different, the problem is that you can cause people to hate your Torah Judaism if you're a Talmud Chacham and you walk out with these stains, but there's a big psychological difference between somebody who identifies on a human being a food stain and one who identifies a semen stain. I think there's a different way that people would come at those two, and I'm not really sure exactly which way the Gemara is going, but I just thought it was interesting, so I do it. Okay. Good. So tell the person that I got a gave him a little head start. Hazak Baruch.
So starting next week.
Is next week already? What date is next week? Is the 31st? No, I'll be here. That the week afterwards I'm starting, yeah. Will you be here Wednesday? I'll see you then. I'll be here next Wednesday.